lead singing a whole lot because I'm preaching, and so once in a while I'll get on the list. And this morning I was thinking, yeah, half the congregation's out with COVID, and I'm going to be leading singing, and but it sounded really good this morning. Everybody sang out, and we're glad to have those of you visiting with us. My fears were put to rest there for leading singing. Everybody sang out real well, and I enjoyed being able to lead singing and worship you in song that way. This morning we are continuing in our study in the book of Judges. Judges chapter 16 is where we are today. Last week we started looking at the life of Samson, looking at the previous chapter. So if you weren't here last week, we're kind of jumping in the middle of this account. But the 15th chapter of Judges kind of sounds like the end of the account of Samson, but it's really not, because we were introduced to him. He was a child of promise. His parents, dedicated him to the Lord. He had the Nazarite vow, but we saw throughout his life he did not always abide by that. But he was not supposed to touch dead things, and he did that, and of course other things as well with his hair, which we'll notice more about today, about not cutting his hair. But the 15th chapter at the end, it says that he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines for 20 years. And what we see with his life is that he was in constant contact with the Philistines. And of course, the people of Israel at this time are being persecuted by the Philistines. And as we noted last week, this is one of these times in the book of Judges where the people are being persecuted, but they did not cry out to the Lord for assistance this time. Most of the time in the book of Judges, the people are persecuted. They get tired of being persecuted. They cry out to the Lord for deliverance, and then God delivers them. Then they stay faithful for a while, and then they go back into their sinful ways. This time, they're so entrenched in this persecution, it seems that they don't even bother to ask for deliverance, but God wants to deliver them anyway. And Samson is a deliverer that God is using to help deliver them from Philistine persecution. Although Samson is far, far from a perfect man, as we saw last week. He wanted to marry a Philistine woman. His parents tried to talk him out of it and saying, there's some other women around that you could marry instead of marrying someone who God has forbid you to do so. But yeah, he was one that if something looked right to him, if he wanted it, Samson is going to go after it. And of course, that's an indictment upon the people of Israel in general at this time. The book of Judges ends with the statement that everybody did what was right in their own eyes. So when they're doing that, they're not doing what's right in God's eyes. They're doing what's right in their own eyes. So, but what we need to remember as we go into chapter 16 here, that God told Samson's parents that their child would begin to save Israel from the Philistines. And God is going to keep his promise. And so that's the way chapter 15 ends, is that Samson is judging in the day of the Philistines. And so they are still under that oppression. So God's promise here is not complete. God's deliverance from the Philistines is not complete at this time. So let's go ahead and get into chapter 16 now. And we're introduced to Samson being here in Gaza. So this is 20 years later after the events of the first couple of chapters, chapters 14 and 15. It says, Samson went to Gaza, and there he saw a prostitute, and he went into her. The Gazites were told, Samson has come here. And they surrounded the place and set an ambush for him all night at the gate of the city. They kept quiet all night, saying, let us wait until the light of morning, then we will kill him. So Samson went to Gaza. Gaza, as you can see here, if you look at the bottom of Philistia here, you see that it is right here, in Philistia. And so this is the area where Samson is. And what we will see here is that it says that he went into a prostitute. So, not giving a whole lot of detail about that, but it appears that Samson is not, in the last 20 years, he has not become a more godly person than he was last time that we saw him. We don't know why he's here either. The only thing we can suppose from this is he's not on a godly mission. And so chapter 16 tells us that he went into this prostitute and went into her. So we have picked up where we left off with Samson living his life the way that he wants to, doing what's right in his own eyes and not concerned for the ways of the Lord. But the people of Gaza, the Gazites, learned that Samson, who is the archenemy of the Philistines, is in their town. So they surround the place where he is staying and set up an ambush to kill him in the morning. And so that is not going to work. So, verse 3, but Samson lay till midnight, and at midnight he arose and took the doors of the gate of the city and the two posts and pulled them up, bar and all, and put them on his shoulders and carried them to the top of the hill that is in front of Hebron. And so this was quite a feat. And so when you look at where Gaza is and where Hebron is, that's 40 miles. And so he carries the gate nearly 40 miles. And so if I woke up at midnight and took a hold of the door in front of our house, which I'm apt to do because I'm so strong, you know, and carry that around our neighborhood, you know, Drill would be so impressed with me as a mighty man of valor. But Samson here, this is not a regular door. This gate is something that is fortified. It is large, and it says that he took the doors of the city gates with the two posts. He pulled them up, and he put them on his shoulders, carrying them to Hebron. And by the way, Hebron is up a hill. So not only is he going a long way, but he's going uphill. And so there's an artist's conception of what that might have looked like. I think that's probably a little smaller than it probably was, it being the gate of the city. So the gates would be quite heavy, as they are the city's protection from attack. And so Samson rips these gates out of the ground and carries them all the way back to Hebron uphill. So what we see here is God again is using Samson to bring judgment against the Philistines. You know, the Gazites plan to attack him obviously did not work. So after those first three verses here in chapter 16, we're introduced to what most of us know about Samson, and that is his relationship with Delilah and what happens after that. So look at verse 4. Verse 4, it says, after this, he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. And the lords of the Philistines came up to her and said, seduce him and see where his great strength lies and by what means we may overpower him, that we may bind him to humble him, and we will give you 1,100 pieces of silver. So Delilah said to Samson, please tell me where your great strength lies and how you might be bound, that one may subdue you. And she's not even cagey in the way that she asked this question. She's upfront about why she wants to know this. Tell me the secret of your strength so I can know how you can be defeated. You know, well, that there should be a warning right there that I don't think that I want to answer this question. That's if somebody asks you, what's your mother's maiden name, your social security number? You know, you're not going to answer that question. And so this is a dangerous question here. And so it kind of harkens back to what we saw last week with his former almost wife, doesn't it? In that tell me the riddle. And she cried and cried and cried, you know, that until he told her the answer to the riddle. And so here again, Samson is going to have a situation with a woman trying to get some information out of it. So the Philistine leaders demand that Delilah find out where this great strength lies, how they can overcome him. And so so it does tell us here that they have figured out that they're not going to be real successful with Samson without some help. That every effort that they have made to capture him, to kill him, it has ended in disaster. Because why? Because Samson is such a godly man. Well, no, not because Samson is such a godly man, but God is using Samson to defeat the Philistines. And so they are not successful at all in trying to do what it is they're trying to do. Every effort they've made has ended up in a disaster. And so they tell Delilah to seduce Samson. Well, at least they have a plan that will probably work, right? Because Samson is going to, if anything will cause Samson to falter, it will be the influence of an ungodly woman. But find out how he has this strength, and if she does this, they will pay her 1,100 pieces of silver each. And so this is saying that each one of these leaders are going to pay her that. So let's talk about this monetary amount here. How much is this in terms of our money? Since this was so long ago historically, but we can look at some scriptures to get a sense of how much money this is. In Judges chapter 17, you see that 10 pieces of silver was offered annually to a Levite as his wage. So keep that in mind. Judges 17, 10 pieces of silver is an annual wage for a Levite. 50 pieces of silver in 2 Samuel was enough for David to buy oxen and a threshing floor. Jeremiah, in Jeremiah chapter 32, paid for a piece of property with 17 pieces of silver. Exodus 21 tells us that the value of a slave was 30 shekels. And so when you see what they are willing to pay here, 1,100 each, this was an enormous amount of money. An enormous amount of money that they are paying Delilah, or willing to pay Delilah. And you consider that each one of these lords was going to pay 1,100 pieces of silver each. This is a staggering amount that they are offering to Delilah. And she accepts. She accepts the offer and tries to seduce Samson to learn the source of his strength. Verse 6, so Delilah said to Samson, please tell me where your great strength lies and how you might be bound so that one can subdue you. So, you know, Samson seems to think this is a game, and he starts telling Delilah lies that, you know, well, I'm going to, my strength is caused by being, if I'm bound up with 7 fresh bowstrings, not just any bowstring, but a bowstring that has not been dried yet, then if you do that, then that's going to cause me not to have strength. Verse 7, Samson said to her, if they bind me with 7 fresh bowstrings that have not been dried, then I shall become weak and like any other man. So Delilah's writing to them and taking it back to the lords. And so then the lords of the Philistines brought up to her 7 fresh bowstrings that had not been dried, and she bound him with them. So what she does next is that Samson is asleep, and she cries out, Samson, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. You know, wake up. You know, fire, fire. And so verse 9 says she had set men lying in ambush. They're waiting, you know, because he's all tied up with these with these strings. And she said to him, "The Philistines are upon you," but he snapped the bowstrings as a thread of flax snaps when it touches the fire. Isn't that an interesting description of that? Have you ever had a piece of pine straw and held it over a fire and you see what happens with it immediately? I mean, it disintegrates. And so here, a little piece of flax, when it touches the fire, you know, it's boom, it's gone. And that's the way these bowstrings were on Samson. It's like putting a string over a fire. It just disintegrated. And so obviously this didn't work. The secret of his strength was not known. And so, you know, she is upset about this, and she does not like that she's been lied to. Then Delilah said to Samson, "Behold, you have mocked me and have told me lies. Please tell me how you might be bound." And he said to her, "If they bind me with new ropes that have not been used, then I shall become weak and be like any other man." So Delilah took new ropes and bound him with them and said to him, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson," and the men lying in ambush were in the inner chamber, but he snapped the ropes of his arms like a thread. So Samson here is playing a game with her. You know, what you might expect for Samson to say is, "I'm not going to tell you because I've already seen what you did with the last information that I gave you. Obviously, you cannot be trusted." And so he keeps playing this game with her. And of course, maybe he just thinks, "Yeah, I'm going to whip the Philistines again. Every time this happens, you know, it's kind of fun for him, maybe." But he tells her that if you bind me with new ropes that have never been used, and so she's okay, new ropes that have never been used, and tells the guys that, and they do that, and the guys are lying in ambush again, and she cries out again, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson," and he snaps the ropes like thread. What is her response? It's the same. You don't love me. You're mocking me. Then Delilah said to Samson, "Until now you have mocked me. You've told me lies. Tell me how you might be bound." And he said to her, "If you weave the seven locks of my head with the web and fasten it tight with the pin, then I shall become weak and be like any other man." So she's annoyed. She says, "You're mocking me. And if you take me to the hairdresser and do something with my hair, then that's going to be the secret." So again, that is done. And verse 14, while he slept, Delilah took the seven locks of his head and wove them into the weave. And she made them tight with the pin and said to him, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." But he awoke from his sleep, pulled away the pin, the loom, and the web. And so, again, the ambush is set up. She does what Samson says to do, and the fancy hairstyle did not, you know, do any good either. So, you know, she is nagging him day after day, and the reaction to this is the same. She said to him, "How can you say I love you?" And you can just hear this conversation. You know, "Oh, you say you love me, but you don't act like you love me. You know, you keep telling me lies. You really don't love me." And he's hearing this all the time. "And how can you say you love me? Your heart's not with me. You've mocked me these three times, and you have not told me where your great strength is." And I can think of so many things that Samson could have said back to her. You know, "Why is it that if you love me, you want me to lose my strength? Why is it that you want people to ambush me? Why is it that you want to hand me over to the Philistines? You know, if you love me, why are you trying to destroy me? Why are you trying to figure out how I can be subdued?" Now, that'd be a great question, wouldn't it, for Samson to ask? But he doesn't. Not that we see. And she said, "You've mocked me these three times. You have not told me where your great strength lies." Yeah, yeah. There's a reason I haven't told you where my great strength lies, because you keep trying to kill me. Verse 16, when she presses him hard with her words day after day and urged him, his soul was vexed to death. You know, his eyes are worn out from rolling them so much, because she keeps asking this question. He's rolling his eyes day after day. And he told her all his heart and said to her, a razor has never come upon my head, for I have been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. If my head is shaved, then my strength will leave me and I shall become weak and be like any other man. And so Delilah here has seen that this is different. What he's saying now, he has opened up to her, and so she coaxes him to go to sleep. When Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, she sent and called the Lord of the Philistines, saying, come up again, for he has told me all his heart. Then the lords of the Philistines came up to her, and she brought the money in their hands. The lords came to her and brought the money in their hands. She made him sleep on her knees. So you get the idea here that he's sitting next to her on the couch, and he falls asleep leaning on her. And she's just, you know, caressing his long hair that's not that's about not to be there. And she made him sleep on her knees. She called a man and had him shave off the 7 locks of his head. Then she began to torment him, and his strength left him. And so we see here that, you know, she finally does get what she wants. Look at verse 20. Verse 20 said, and she said, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. And he awoke from his sleep and said, I will go out as at the other times and shake myself free. But he did not know that the Lord had left him. I find that, you know, a very interesting statement. It does say that he did not know that the Lord had left him. It doesn't say that he didn't realize his hair had been cut. I would absolutely know if I had that much hair and it had been cut off. I'm very aware when I get just a little bit of the little bit of hair that I have, you know, when I get that cut, it feels different, doesn't it, after you get a haircut. So I can't imagine here that Samson wakes up and, oh, I'm going to do what I always did. You know, this is not the first time he's broken the Nazarite vow. And so I'm just not sure that he didn't know that his hair was cut off. I would immediately know the difference on my head as soon as I woke up. But here's the thing, is that Samson has lost his strength. And what seems to have happened here is that this is really the last straw with Samson disregarding his vow his whole life. We saw that throughout chapters 13, 14, and 15. He is not keeping this vow. And so he's been touching the bodies of dead animals. He's been in the vineyards. He's been at the feast where there's wine and grapes. He's disregarding the laws of the Lord, wanting to marry a Philistine woman. He's sleeping with prostitutes. And now he tells Delilah about his hair, knowing full well what she's going to do. How could he not know? It seems just to be a blatant disregard for this vow to the Lord yet again. And the text here declares the Lord left him. And he didn't know that the Lord had left him. And that is very, very sad. And the loss of hair really symbolized the problem that the Lord had left Samson. So that's super, super important. And one thing that, if you go back and look at chapters 13 through 15, every time that Samson was able to subdue his enemies, you read that the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him. And in chapter 16, you don't see that phrase anywhere. You don't see that phrase anywhere. you see silence regarding the Spirit of the Lord in chapter 16. So, you know, sin and blatant disregard for God's directions is a serious matter, and it causes us to be separated from God. So God has been giving grace upon Samson's life, you know, all of this time, even though certainly you could look at his behavior and say, well, he didn't deserve it. Well, God had made a promise to his people that was going to be fulfilled through Samson. And Samson seems to be unable to see how dependent he was on the grace and power of God, but now there is a harsh reality that has hit him. Verse 21 says, the Philistine seized him and gouged out his eyes and brought him down to Gaza and bound him with bronze shackles. And he ground at the mill in prison. But the hair of his head began to grow again after it had been shaved. And so what we see here is that although his hair was shaved, you know, it's starting to grow back. You get the indication here that all hope is not lost. And verse 23 says, the lords of the Philistines gathered to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and rejoice. And they said, our God has given Samson, our enemy, into our hand. And that's just despicable, isn't it, when you read that? When you read that this person that should have been a servant of God is causing the enemies of God to mock. And to mock the true God. Oh, we've defeated Samson. And it's because of our God, our false, little g, false God. So, the Lord has left Samson. And his eyes are gouged out. Of course, he's not able to see. He's taken to Gaza, which is the principal city of the Philistines. And they're rejoicing that Samson is in their hands. But we know that God is not going to allow this glory to go to the false gods. The Philistines are praising their God as they see, you know, Samson subdued. They've really made him into their entertainment. And what they've done is they place him between, you know, two pillars. Verse 25 says, when their hearts were merry, they said, call Samson that he may entertain us. So the indication here is that they're drunk, that they're partying and they're merry. And call Samson that he may entertain us. So they called Samson out of prison. He entertained them. They made him stand between the pillars. Verse 26, and Samson said to the young man who held him by the hand, let me feel the pillars on which the house rests, that I may lean against them. Now the house was full of men and women, and all the lords of the Philistines were there, and on the roof there were about 3,000 men and women who looked on while Samson entertained. And so, Samson, at this point, has a plan. In verse 28, it says that he called to the Lord and said, O Lord God, please remember me and please strengthen me only this once, O God, that I may be avenged on the Philistines for my two eyes. And Samson grasped the two middle pillars on which the house rested, and he leaned his weight against them, his right hand on the one and his left hand on the other. So notice here that we see Samson addressing the Lord, asking God for strength one more time so that he can avenge the Philistines. But note the reason that he wants this strength. He doesn't say that, please help me to deliver Israel from Philistine affliction. He doesn't say that, I want the name of God to be glorified and God's name has been mocked. As we have seen all throughout the narrative of Samson, he wants this for himself. He wants vengeance for his eyes being gouged out. So, Samson wants this for his own purposes, for his own vengeance. And despite all these reasons, this is really the first time that we see Samson reach out to God in the whole narrative. So Samson does place his hands on two pillars, and with all the strength he pushes the pillars down. Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." And he bowed with all his strength, and the house fell upon the lords and upon all the people who were in it. So the dead whom he killed at his death were more than those whom he had killed during his life. Then his brothers and all his family came down and took him and brought him up and buried him between Zorah and Eshtaol in the tomb of Manoah his father. He had judged Israel 20 years. So verse 30 observes that he killed more at his death than he had killed during his life. And that was, you know, a substantial number. So what do we gather from this account, other than, you know, some really pitiful downfalls in the life of Samson? First of all, we see the faithfulness of God. That we see God, even though Samson is unfaithful to the Nazarite vow, God is still faithful to his promise to begin to deliver Israel, you know, through his hands. And even though Israel is unfaithful, God is still faithful to his promise to deliver them as well. And so 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 11 says, "The saying is trustworthy, for if we have died with him, we also live with him. If we endure, we will also reign with him. If we deny him, he will also deny us. If we are faithless, he remains faithful." And so we can see that throughout history, that God is always faithful, and God promising to deliver the Israelites, he's going to keep his promises. He always does. And that's why the righteous can live by faith. They can have that confidence that God is always faithful to his word. And when God says he will do something, then he will do it. And so many promises that we can consider that give us strength. One was read this morning in Romans chapter 4, verses 1 through 8. "What then shall we say was gained by Abraham, our forefather, according to the flesh? For if Abraham was justified by works, he had something to boast about, but not before God. For what does the Scripture say? Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him as righteousness. Now to the one who works, his wages are not counted as a gift, but as his due. And the one who does not work, but believes in him who justifies the ungodly, his faith is counted as righteousness. But as David also speaks of the blessing of the one to whom God counts righteousness apart from works, blessed are those whose lawless deeds are forgiven, whose sins are covered. Blessed is the man against whom the Lord will not count his sin." And that is a great, great blessing. It's a great promise that God kept his promises to Abraham. He has always kept his promises, and he has paid the price for us so that sin does not have to be counted against us. And that is the greatest promise that there is. We see in the account of Samson the picture of the salvation of God and how that he saves. The death of Samson here is very sad, but it is the means by which God was bringing about the deliverance of Israel from the wicked Philistines. And so through the death of Samson, God fulfilled his promise to deliver. And through the death of Jesus, God fulfilled his promise to deliver us. So really, the way that this ends here is we see the picture of the strength of God. You know, just a few moments earlier, people were praising their false god and having a party because they felt like Samson had been defeated. But God was not defeated. God was not defeated, and God kept his promise to his people just as he always does. So I know Samson is one of those, you know, it's one of those stories that we know. It's probably one of the most well-known characters in the Bible, but when you start looking at his life, maybe we don't want to look at him as much. But when we do look at him, it should teach us some lessons. He is a very arrogant person that did not follow through with his vows. And he did what was right in his own eyes. And every time that he did that, it got him into trouble. And so his life can be a lesson to us as one not to follow. So let's remember that when we think about Samson. But we can also be thankful that God used Samson to fulfill his promise to his people to deliver them, and that God sent his son to suffer and die for us so that we can have deliverance. So this is a picture of deliverance, and that's what we should remember from this account. Hope this study through the book of Judges is useful. I'm enjoying going through this and learning new things as we study together. If you have reason to respond to the invitation today, perhaps maybe you have been going off in your own direction and have not been listening to God. If we can help you in any way to respond to the gospel invitation, we invite you to come while we stand together and sing.
I found my Lord and He is mine. He won me by His love. I'll serve Him all the years of time and dwell with Him above. His yoke is easy, His burden is light. I found it so. His service is my sweetest delight. His blessings ever flow. No other Lord but Christ I know. He walked with Him alone. His streams of love forever flow. Within my heart His throne. His yoke is easy, His burden is light. I found it so. His service is my sweetest delight. His blessings ever flow. He's dearer to my heart than life. He found me lost in sin. He calmed the sea of inward strife and bid me come to Him. His yoke is easy, His burden is light. I found it so. His service is my sweetest delight. His blessings ever flow. I've tried the road of sin and found its prospects all deceit. I prove the Lord and joys abound more than I could believe. His yoke is easy, His burden is light. I found it so. His service is my sweetest delight. His blessings ever flow.
It's been good to be with you today. It's been an encouraging service to me to see somebody out today. When we have a lot that are sick, we want to continue to pray for, see what we can do for them. But thank you all for being here this morning. Appreciate our visitors being with us today. Hope that you can come back again. We meet every Sunday morning at 9:30 for Bible class. Sunday morning worship at 10:30. Wednesday night Bible class at 7 o'clock. Are there any other announcements that we need to make at this time? If not, we'll be led in prayer and then we'll be dismissed.
Let us pray. Our dearest Heavenly Father, we're so very thankful to Thee that You've seen fit to help guide surgeons, to guide people's health, that several people that have had problems before are doing better, and that surgeries have happened that have been well. We thank You, dear Father, for the various ways that You've helped us in our own lives. And we know there are still others that need care. So we ask that You'll please continue helping those and be with the leaders of this nation and other nations, that things can go well for the Christians and people that are trying to be Christians, that You can guide